हरि श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सदि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
टॉप ऑफ 37.
After ridding himself of his royal robes and ornaments, Yudhishthira donned torn cloth. He gave up eating all solid food. He let his hair hang down loose and voluntarily became dumb. Thus, assuming the appearance of a madman, Yudhishthira showed no interest in anything, even his brothers. He acted as if he heard nothing around him, just like a deaf man. Completely giving up the bodily conception of life, Yudhishthira departed at once for the north to absorb himself fully in thought of the Supreme Lord. In his purport to verse 42, Srila Prabhupada describes the meditational technique that Maharaj Yudhishthira employed. All that is manifest in the material world is the product of the mahatattva avyakta, and things that are visible in our material vision are nothing but combinations and permutations of such variegated material products. Right, so this is important because we're going to get technical here, right? So, in other words, as the mahatattva is, right, and then you have the primary creation and that aspect of virat or vairaja, right, or the universal form. So that is what everything is. That's all anything is, right? But then we have the physical manifestation of it.
Yes.
Right? But all it is the same. Like you see a column here, you see a column in Rome, you see one, you know, in London, you see one in China. It's doing the same thing. Its external is slightly different, but the principle of the pillar is the same. So all you're seeing is that principle in specific manifestation.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
So that's what he's meaning here, that all things that are visible are nothing but combinations and permutations of the variegated. So all that is manifest in the world is the product of the mahatattva of yakta. Means that's all it is. The principles is what is pervading everything. Then there's the specifics of the particular external material, the pancha mahabhuta, that makes that visible. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Right, yeah. Yes.
Think before.
Okay.
Simultaneously.
Okay.
Start. Teachers.
Oh, sorry, the front, go to the back.
So what's the similarity or difference between the universal form and Brahman?
Basically, it's the same. It's just that in the universal form, then the qualities of Brahman are put together, organized in a way that whatever will be created within this world has a blueprint to function from. See, because Brahman means it is the masculine and feminine principle that is impersonal. It's not specific. Like I said, column. That's impersonal. This column, that's personal.
Yeah.
You understand? So it's functioning on the impersonal principle, because it's all it is Krishna's impersonal potency that's making it work. Right? It means Krishna himself personally doesn't have to hold that column up. Just his effulgence can do it. You understand? So basically, the Brahman platform and the universal form are the same. That's why it's, in one sense, a first step. It's easy for the impersonalist to relate to, right? Does that make sense? So And we see as we get into the second canto that this is the position for the lower level transcendentalist, right? The impersonalist, who doesn't have a personal form. I mean, understanding of the personal form. So then that works for them. But the whole point is so we could say is, oh, that's a lower level. Yes, it is a lower level from a transcendental point of view. Right? But from a grossly material point of view, it's actually quite elevated. Right? So in other words, we have used a combination. They have to start there because they just can't relate to the personal form. So then they can start to see in all these different things and piece it together, and kind of once you've accepted that, then they can make that step to Paramatma, to Bhagavan. For us, we accept the concept of Bhagavan, but our concept of Bhagavan is actually quite material.
Yes.
So we have to use, we use the both simultaneously. We accept the principle, and then we get adjusted with it, but at the same time as we only accept it in certain places. You know, God sits in, you know, churches or temples. Yes. You know, we might be able to appreciate some of his power out in nature. And that's kind of about it. Did I leave anything else out? Okay, young lovers, then that's, you know, some of them will look at it that way, but most don't. And, you know, so it's kind of, that's about it. You know, something very special and magnificent, they might get that, but that's even that's rare.
What's that?
And we're talking, that's devotees. We're talking about the materialist, you know, like that. That's where you go, Hari Bol. I'm not a materialist. Yeah, okay. Okay. So, does that make sense? So, for us, because our concept of the personal form is quite limited, but we accept it. Therefore, we use that as the primary. But in the areas that we don't accept God's existence, you know, like in our day-to-day life, like our house or things like that, that's where we use this Brahman element. Right? So because at that point, we're functioning below the transcendental. So then that brings us to the transcendental. And once we're transcendental, we'll automatically, as devotees, think of the personal. Right? While the impersonalist is at that level, he thinks any form is material, so he learns that forms and that can be has that spiritual element. Then he can go. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So we're using two at once, like that.
So when one becomes completely transcendental, then they always see the personal form.
You see, the personal means it's not that you don't see the, because Krishna is expanding everything in everything through his impersonal form, but we'll remember it's the person who's doing that.
Oh, okay, yeah, yeah.
So it's not that, you know, it's that's, you know what I'm saying? If it goes farther, then yes, you can see Krishna and everything like that. And he'll appear there. But you have to see him there, then he's there. Yeah. Otherwise, he's there in Brahman or Paramatma form. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because that's how he manages it. But if you remember the manager is Krishna, then he'll manifest there. Does that make sense? Yeah. But the living entity is different from such material products, right? The gross and the subtle, right? And then this is even beyond the subtle, right? It's a subtle form of the manifestation instead of the gross form, but it's still not the spiritual form. Yes?
And what was the difference between what Yudhishthira saw before he decided to renounce and after the same calling?
Before he would see it in connection with the service by his external duties. So he's functioning on two platforms at once, the Vedic and the Bhagavad. So basically all he's dropping is the duty forms of the Vedic and just sticking to the philosophical forms. Right. So in other words, the Purva aspects of the Vedas he's dropping. And only leaving the Uttara, right? Mm-hmm. So only Upanishads. Mm. Does that make sense? So metaphysics on up is what he's seeing. Right? You know, so because you're seeing the metaphysic, you can tell Brahman's in the form of a column, so you don't bump into it. If anybody wondered why Sukadeva Goswami wasn't like, you know, a pinball machine, you know, off the trees and stuff. Yeah. Does that make sense? Because he can tell the difference between Brahman, one aspect of Brahman and another. Yeah?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. You know, so that's why the girls weren't worried about covering up, because they were so busy laughing that they completely forgot themselves, right? You know. right?
Yeah, little known fact. But
yes, yeah. Yeah. So is that, so that's the whole thing, you just switch. That's the whole point of the process. There's no difference between one aspect and the next because it's one thing. So what's the difference is the visesha, or the uniqueness. So then that uniqueness just gets more and more simplified. The potency in it becomes less and less. And it's manifested through, you know, more inferior elements. Does that make sense? Yes.
So we see two examples. One is Yudhishthira Maharaj, and the second is Maharaj Parikshit. And one lives his body in like great association and great sangha, and one is just going alone. So, and they're both pure devotees of the Lord. So what's the difference?
Well, on the one sense is Parikshit Maharaj knew he only had a very short time, so he was hearing. Yudhishthira Maharaj is going by what he's heard, and now he's just going to go to a out of the way place to absorb himself. Like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So for us is that, you know, you have a combination. It's secluded, but at the same time as you're in the association.
And then how is that secluded?
Secluded means it's away from the more materialistic elements. Yes. You understand? Mm-hmm. That's secluded. Okay. Like we're living in the forest of Mayapur. Mm-hmm. Like that. Though in some places when you only have 3 feet between houses, that's hard to appreciate. But hey. Like that. You know, it's still a jungle. You know, like New York's a jungle. Yeah, like that. Yes.
Considering Maharaj Yudhishthira was a pure devotee and was already practicing, you know, Yukta Vayagra to, you know, the pure extent, was it really so necessary for him to kind of become a hermit?
For himself, not necessarily. Means for his own realization, no.
Yeah.
But, I mean, from a few angles. One is that you're setting example, of course, for us. Because he's taking part in the Lord's pastime. So part of that pastime is going to be setting the example how to act in all these various situations.
So right. In a sense, he was still carrying out duty.
Yes, in that way. Yeah. And then from another aspect is just, even from the devotional point of view, butting heads with the material energy for Krishna and not butting heads with the material energy for Krishna, not butting heads is easier.
Yeah.
Right? So now since his duties of running the kingdom are over, then why get involved? Because there's nothing here for the soul, so then they only just deal with maintenance. So if there's service to do, then you deal with the material energy. That was what came up, it was yesterday's point on the sannyas, is that the sannyas makes a facility that you don't have to deal so much with it on the social element. But it's not that in doing activities for Krishna that you can't be doing all kinds of great works with the material energy. So we have to be careful that that's not seen as the same, right? Because it's dealing with money, management, authority, all these different things. Because the point of the material world is to come to the point of it's all about Krishna. And because we deal with the external and generally don't see the subtle, and then we don't see this more subtle of the creation of the universe. Because here when it's talking about creation, then the mind, intelligence, that's gross.
Yeah.
Right? And so before that's the blueprints of that. That's more subtle. Right? So any of these levels are how you say? One has to appreciate the subtler forms. If one's only dealing with the grosser forms, then, because they're all connected, then the Vedas give grosser forms to deal with. So those who can't appreciate the subtler forms, there is a gross form to work with. Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. But we can't simultaneously work on we're not the body Prabhu, and then at the same time the sannyasis have to be totally gross.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? It's very inconsistent. You know? So the whole idea is that either we function at a subtle form with some with the gross touch, or we settle more in the gross and hopefully then there's some subtle.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So the systems can handle it all. The problem is the neophyte can't handle it all. The Madhyama, the Uttama can. The neophyte, they're the ones that have the problem. So therefore in the preaching mission, you have to be able to accommodate that. right? Even if not in the mission, it means not in an organized institution. Because any preaching, Agnarad Muni, it's a mission, but it's not an institution. Right? So in either one, you still have to deal with that. Just like the king cobra. Narad Muni made a king cobra into a devotee. And so he told him, you know, now that you're king cobra, don't bite anybody. So then he used to live under the bridge. And then, you know, the kids would come. You know how kids are. They like to come and harass, you know, get as close to danger as possible and get out. So then when they came, they saw that the king cobra wasn't doing anything. He's just, you know, just sitting there, not anything. So then the kids are coming, throwing rocks, coming with sticks, you know, just really creating trouble. So when Narad Muni came sometime later, you know, asked how was he doing, and he could see it wasn't so well, so what's wrong? And he said, the kids are coming and bothering because I don't bite anyone, so nobody's afraid. Narad Muni says, I told you don't bite anyone. I didn't say don't raise your hood. Right? In other words, you do what's necessary so that your service goes nicer. You know, things shouldn't be bothered by others. So you do what you need to make that work. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a balance. We're people. But this other thing, oh, we don't deal with that in any situation, that's nice on the principled platform, but you have to apply that. So therefore, you know, like does that make sense? You know, it's just like here in the Dom, we don't have to wear shoes. Mostly, basically, in India, you don't have to wear shoes. Maybe in Calcutta, you'd want to wear shoes. But, you know, you don't have to. No one will look at you funny. And so means other than, okay, here's a sadhu, right? You know? And so, and in some situations in the West, you know, you're on Venice Beach, or, you know, you can get away with it also, you know, like that. But so different things, then they might expect something, right? But then let's say if you're going up to, you want to do, you know, North Pole preaching or something, then you might want to wear shoes. Does that make sense? So the whole point is you're not wearing shoes because you like shoes. You're wearing shoes because it just, otherwise you can't do your service.
Yeah.
Like that. Does that make sense? So that's how Yudhishthira is functioning.
Yeah.
He's only functioning with the material energy as much as necessary for his service. So now his service is not running a kingdom, so he reduces it down to practically nothing.
So what's a good way to kind of get a good understanding of these subtleties, these more, you know, the things that aren't necessarily, you know, definitely right or wrong? It's more of a...
That is by association. So that's why we hear and chant in the assembly, association of devotees. So we read ourselves, we get an understanding, we contemplate, then we associate with others, and then we start to see. And then it works very, very nicely. Because the point is, in other words, if we can apply the principle in its more traditional form, why wouldn't we? You know? But, you know, just like same example, is that walking down, you know, how you say, any street in New York wearing your bed sheets, then no one's even going to turn to look at you. Because there's more weird people than you walking down the street. So no one will even look. Right? So then, since you can get it, why wouldn't you do it? In other words, if the first option is there, why not take it? But if you're in a situation where they just can't relate, and because of that they're not going to listen to your philosophy, then why not wear something that then they'll be at ease? But the point is not that wearing Western clothes is fine. No, it's useful in this situation.
Yeah.
Otherwise, in other situations, how is it useful? If I walk down the street in a suit, then who knows I'm a Hare Krishna? Unless you have a bald head and tilak. Right? But most who wear the suit don't wear the bald head and tilak, right? You know, because they really want to fit in. And you do fit in. It's just like you're swallowed up by material energy and you're just another face in the crowd. It's that simple. So the whole idea is that you have to be able to see what is actually useful. So in other words, what is the tradition is always your first option. If that won't be effective, then you take the second option, then the third option. You don't go from first to you know, worn out jeans.
Yeah.
You know, like that. You know, there's chinos are in between. You know. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the whole thing, is you use that as a method. So whatever will work in the situation you're in, that's what you do. So Yudhishthira's in that position that he's a king. If he doesn't dress as a king, a king doesn't dress as a king, no one takes him seriously. You know, like I was hearing one devotee was saying that, you know, he works in a big, high-level business. And I actually heard a few devotees say this. And so then if he shows up, he doesn't need to go to the meeting in a fancy car. But if he doesn't, the people at the meeting don't take him seriously, and business doesn't happen.
Right.
Like that. So therefore, for that, he has to use a fancy car.
Yeah, that would be so.
You understand?
Yeah.
So that's the point. Otherwise, you say, oh, that's so materialistic and that. No, it's just necessity.
Yeah.
Just like if you want to, how you say, you want to bang a nail, a hammer is good. You could use a brick,
yeah.
You know, but the hammer works quite well. And then you get a good hammer, it's balanced, it doesn't, you know, it's got a good tip, it doesn't, you know, so, yeah, how you say, deflect off the nail, you know, all these different things. So therefore, it is better for Krishna's service, if it's available. If it's not available, you don't over-endeavor to get it.
Yeah.
Right? It's not like you need to put the nail in now, you know, because something's happening and there's a hammer there, but you don't touch, you know, anything less than a $150 hammer. So therefore, you get in your car, go out to the, you know, the shop and buy one, come back. By that time, the program's over and that, but you got the right hammer for the right job. You know, so that would be a misunderstanding. Then you just pick up whatever's there and bang it into the wall. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's the whole point. So that is gained by one's own contemplation, but by association. Because the point is you have to be able to look at things due to fact rather than attachment.
Right.
Because with attachment, we'll say, oh, this has to be done, that has to be done. But and technically, it doesn't necessarily have to be. If one has an attachment, then one engages in Krishna's service at whatever level one can. And that's fine. But one shouldn't say, because I'm engaging my attachment, I don't want to feel embarrassed that it's an attachment. Therefore, I'll say that everybody else, if they're not doing that, is a fanatic.
Yeah.
You know? And in the same way, if they're not up to my standard, then I'll say that they're, you know, that they have a problem. So it's not that they're saying tradition is one thing and anything else. No, his tradition's, you know, bogus, and exactly my narrow keyhole vision of society, that's perfect. Anything above that's fanatic, everything below that's below standard. You know what I'm saying? So technically speaking, this is the only liberal view. The modern liberal view is not liberal at all. Otherwise, why can't they if they're liberal, why can't they accommodate conservatives?
Right.
You know, you'd expect the conservatives, there's only conservatives and they can't relate to anything else, but the liberals can relate to everybody. But liberals can't accommodate conservatives as much as conservatives can't accommodate liberals. So there's no, all it is you move the conservative over to here. Then, or not say conservative, the narrow-mindedness. You know what I'm saying? That's all. Someone's, you know, reactionary right. It's just as narrow, but it's farther right. You know, if one's, you know, how you say, what do you call it? Revolutionary left. It's the same narrow and all the way over here. You know, oh, the conservatives are killing these people, so they will kill people, even people that aren't conservatives, to get their work done, to get at the conservatives. So they're just, you know, what's the difference? All it is just what it is that you say. You know how you say gives authority to what you're doing. That's why then the problem comes up, is that unless you work by the authority of Shastra, then it's going to be, it won't have a consistent standard. Does that make sense? But it's a very important point, is how to be able to judge, you know? And whatever you're doing, try to make it consistent. You know, otherwise in one area it's, you know, the pure devotee, and the other area it's the, you know, just being down to earth, practical, gross materialist. You know, it gets a little bit, so it's difficult. There should be more of a consistency. So, in other words, the easiest way to make the consistency, because there's going to be a difference in the practice. One area is very easy to function on pure devotion. Another one, it's exceedingly mixed,
yes.
Is you're working on the principle. You recognize it is mixed, but that's where I am at today. That's what I have to deal with today. It's not good, but in reality, that's what I have to do. Then you do it, and by doing that, with that mentality, then you'll be able to let go. And then slowly, slowly it'll improve. It's not that the principle won't remain.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say somebody likes things to be efficient or well organized. Then fine, but here it's well organized because I'm in control of it. But just, you know, later it can come, it can be well organized by anybody. And well organized, why well organized? Not because I like it, because then it gives a good result for Krishna.
Yeah.
Right? Because before, it gets a good result for myself. It's the only way I can handle it. Other people drive me nuts. You know, I don't want bad results. I wouldn't want to be connected with something with bad results. You know, so many aspects. So it's you still end up as a good manager in pure devotional service, but now it's because it gets a good effect for Krishna. Does that make sense? So then it will be progressive. Then it's consistent, even though you're dealing in different areas in your life, but there's one consistency because pure devotion is the standard. But this other way is then pure devotion is not the standard. It can't be because the Shastra recommends it, and if we're not accepting what Shastra says, in all cases we pick and choose, that means we're not actually choosing pure devotional service.
Yeah.
Right? We'll give lip service, but you know, not really. And then there'll be a real difference between one aspect of our devotional service and another. Therefore, we'll be working this very Western, modernized thing at the same time as then for the brahmacharis, it's got to be out of Satya Yuga. You know, so that kind of stuff is really unnecessary. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So that's what you're trying to do. So that's why it's Bhakti Yoga, or the Yoga of Intelligence. So you're using whatever needs to be, the elements of karma or bodily action, the mind, you're using the intelligence and the senses. So whatever at this point can be engaged, to whatever degree you can engage it in pure devotional service, then it's always adjusting. That's buddhi. Right? That's intelligence. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why the devotee is broad mind, he understands, okay, this person's acting like this because of their attachment. So as long as there's no attitude, what's the problem?
Right.
It's just like a little kid. They can't do things right, but no one's going, little kids are so stupid. You know, like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, so now you're white rocking by and the kid's on his little bicycle with the two little wheels and they're going down like this, and then you know the guy coming in with his professional bike, titanium and everything like that, and he goes, oh, you can call that bicycle riding. Right? They won't do that. They'll be thinking, wow, hey, this kid in the future may be winning, you know, a living gold, right? You know, that's something. He's just thinking, yeah, that's it, get an early start, you know. So that's the real thing. The other way is it's not human. Though it's being claimed to be human. But it's actually subhuman. Human means you can accommodate. Human is intelligent. Right? Dog. Certain things, it's normal, the way he likes it, it's fine. It's different than what he knows. He barks. That's all. It's just, it's different than, so, you know, people are thinking, I'm the liberal. No, you're just a dog. Yeah. Dogs bark at anything that's out of the ordinary. Whatever they grow up in, that's ordinary. Anything different than that, they'll freak. Right? Mm-hmm. He grows up, you know, on the, how you say, he grows up on the Upper East Side. Then if he sees, you know, an African American, he barks. He grows up in Harlem, he sees a cracker, he barks. You understand? It's just, that's the way a dog is.
Yeah.
You know? But, you know, due to euphemistic words, words are really good. You could say all kinds of stuff, you know, like we were discussing the other day. Ethnic cleansing. You know, it actually sounds quite positive, right? You know, you're cleaning the place up, you know. It's something to do with ethnicity. Yeah. Ethnicity is good. Cleanliness is good. It's got to be good. You know? But it's not. It's just words. So that's the whole point, is that we have to be careful, is that words are not enough. We have to be able to apply the words. But first we have to understand them. So in the beginning, yes, we get an intellectual understanding. We don't necessarily know how to, but that's the first step. But if we leave it at that and say, this is good, then that's not enough. Does that make sense?
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah.
All right.
Yes.
So, I want to say the reason someone has refused the tradition is that basically they're not getting what the tradition gives, so they're keeping their attachment.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so the point is ultimately the soul has to be able to perform an activity that gives them some satisfaction, some happiness. Right? That's the nature of the soul. There has to be some knowledge. So you understand, you're comfortable with the field, you know how to work in the field, you know how to get results from the field. So that's just the nature of the soul. So it's not the nature of the Westerner. Right? They pride themselves in being the practical and all that. Like it means, but while the Westerner was still in bearskins and not taking a bath, I mean at all, like that, then everybody else within the tropics already had flourishing civilizations, you know, and buildings, and they took bath a few times a day, and fine cloth, and, you know, music, and, you know, all kinds, you know, the list is like, goes on, right? The other guys had a good, you know, they had a good club or a battle axe, you know, something like that, but that's about the limit of it. You know what I'm saying? So then the whole point is this, when this attitude comes up, it's the principle, it's the soul that's looking for that. But because the soul comes from that place, and they claim it's this that's reality. Now, if they came from the same soul, if they had appeared in a different culture, then they would say that that's the culture. Right? You know, it's just a matter of time before we get, you know, Krishna far east. you know, none of this Indian stuff. You know, far east. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is that it's just wherever you're from. You know. So that's the whole point. It's wherever you're from. That's what you're looking at. But that's because of the soul. So even the problem comes up, it's not actually because it's the soul. So you can still even see the spiritual elements in it. Right? In other words, the desire is still coming from the soul. It's just the method is basically useless. You know, it's just like the kid wants to eat. It's a good concept. But, you know, the curtains aren't going to do it. You know, or daddy's shoe slipper, or, you know, the rubber ball. You know, because it all, you know, they try everything. It's not going to work. You know what I'm saying? So that's why moms are there, right? You know, then they show what real food is. So that's why the acharyas are there. They actually show what's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I have a practical question. So if you're in an environment with many souls which have this perspective, what's the most ecological, personal attitude to follow tradition, to do what you believe in, what you're following, and get by?
Probably the easiest is to find a good travel agent. Right? We have 400 centers around the world, so, you know, that's one. The other is just, the point is you do what you are comfortable with that works for you, and your, because the point is they're doing what works for them. It's not a matter of broad-mindedness. They're doing exactly what works for them, not one bit different. You know, if you bring an item of Western clothes that they would never wear, they won't wear it. Even though, let's say, it's fashionable or it's in, they won't do it. You know what I'm saying? So it's not about the society and this, it's about themselves. So therefore, you do what's good for your situation in Krishna consciousness. They don't like it. Immediately just talk about it. So then that just, you know, says, so what about your broad, you claim to be broad-minded. Says, where's the broad mind? You can't accommodate that I can do it, so I'm doing it and I'm comfortable with it. I like doing it and you can't accommodate that. What is that? You know, tell them, which cultures does that fall into? Right? Who are the leaders? Mussolini? Tito? Stalin? Hey. Of course, you couldn't use Hitler. You know, unless, you know, if they're not Jewish, then you could. But some say Hitler was Jewish, so. You understand? So the point is, as blunt as they get, the Vedas have already dealt with it millions of years ago. Bhrigu, millions of years ago, already told what's modern. Modern means not Vedic. It's that simple. Because modern is what's always changing. Vedic is always there. The laws of nature exist eternally. They don't change. Nothing changes. It's an illusion to think society changes, we can't function anymore. That's exactly what Kali Raj wants you to think. And he's one. You profess that, hey, you're one of his boys. You know, it's just Maya's trick. The point is you be practical. And practical means what gets Krishna consciousness done. Now, if your point is, I just want to merge in, I don't want to stand out, I don't want to be recognized as the devotee, great. Then doing what you're doing works nice. But don't claim that that's Krishna consciousness. Claim that that's my own need. That's all. That's honest. That's truth. And in the age of where everybody's talking about truth, then that's reality. The point is if you don't know your own attachments, then how are you going to advance? And if you don't know your own attachments, how will you help anyone else with theirs? You know, is it? Yes.
Well, as in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami, Rupa Goswami defines Vaidhi Bhakti as following the injunctions of the Shastras.
Yeah, Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi. If it's not according to the Pancharatra, Vidim, Vinat, if it's not according to that, it's a disturbance. In other words, these things are a disturbance in society. They're not real society. They're not a part of society. They're just a disturbance. But because of ego and attachment, then you have to get everybody else to do it. Right? The easiest way to not change is get everybody else to do what you're doing. Right? But the actual easiest way is just change yourself, and then you fit in anywhere.
Yeah, common argument I heard is that Vedic means Indian culture.
Yes, that is a totally bogus thing that was created by the British to destroy Indian culture. British started Indology. It was designed to destroy Indian culture. So then, what's the point of that? That would be like saying, for you know, somebody in let's say, you know, Jerusalem to decide, I'm going to become a PhD in gas chamber technology, and by that we're going to, you know, somehow or another further, you know, the Judaic culture. It's about that intelligent. But the Brits are good. The Brits are good. They know how to sell pure, unalloyed, false ego as something perfectly normal. They're the best. They're even better than the Americans. You know? The Americans, what they got, they learned from the Brits. You know? The Brits are good. But the problem is if the direction is wrong, then it makes them the worst. That's the whole point. Does that make sense? But, yeah, having said that, there is an underlying element of humility on another side that's there in the Brit that you don't necessarily find across the ocean. You know, so everybody has their strength and weakness. But the point is that it was designed to destroy the Vedic culture. And you can see anybody who gets into it, the first thing they do is get a doubt about the Vedic culture. You know, it's the common point. You understand? Those who are intelligent, then they see through it. You understand? And then they know what to do. They know what to do with it. You know, like that. And then those persons are more rare. Right? I've heard of two devotees who figured out basically what to do with the modern academy. And, I can't remember his name. One of them was out of Texas. And the other one, PKG. They both figured out what they could do with it. How to actually use it on itself. Prajumna is not bad also. But the other ones are swallowed up.
Krishna Kshetra?
Motivati. Does that make sense? You know. In other words, the point is to use it well, you have to know what it is. Like that. Like Yudhishthira can use this nicely because he knows it's illusion. And so, therefore, since it's illusion, who created that? Krishna. So, who created the rules that the illusion works on? Krishna. So you follow Krishna's rules on illusion, it works very nicely. It's going to work as good as it works. And we see as good as it works was
You know, he's, you know, son of the emperor, then he's got nothing, then he's the emperor, then he's got nothing, then he's the emperor, then and now he gives it all up and has nothing again.
And he's cool.
And that's as good as it goes. So he knows that, so he's not a problem. So unless you know what you're dealing with, you can't be very good. You can't call someone a good horse trainer who doesn't know horses. If you just have an idyllic concept of them, then, you know, they're going to, you know, kick you out of the stall. I mean, literally. Like that. It's like the horse here is that, you know, you bother him, you see he turns around.
Yes.
Like that. You know, you think, oh, he doesn't want to talk to you. No, he's about ready to kick you. You know, harass him a little bit more. And then, so it's that you don't know. So the point is the horse trainer knows all the weaknesses of the horse, but knows all their strengths. And it knows their nature. They can do something with it, but someone who's illusioned by the modern academy can do nothing with it. I mean, zero.
The example gave about Yudhisthira, any emperor in illusion would just have a crisis, I mean, losing their empire.
They would lose their, yes. Crisis. That's the whole point. So that's what happened. So that's why he's showing. If it means this is the way to do it. If you do it any other way, you will be burnt. You just have to be. So that's the whole point. It's not about tradition. It's not about not tradition. It's about being Krishna conscious. Tradition, why it's there, is because that's what practically worked for the great souls. Right? It means, in other words, I do something, if it works, I do it again. Right? You know, like I have a can opener and a can, and I do it in a certain way and it works. I'll do that again. So that becomes tradition. Then if someone else comes in the kitchen, takes the can open, and goes to use a different... No, you can't use it like that. You've got to use it like this. Okay? So that's tradition. It's practical. Tradition means what is practical. But the problem comes is that now with time... Okay, now the other person learned. But they didn't know why, because they weren't the one that figured it out and tried all the different ways and figured out if you hold the can like this, the can open like this, then it works. Right? So they don't know. So when someone says, you know, goes to do it a different way, you can't do it that way. And they go, why? They can't say it. So then you go, oh, see, this is all dogma and this and that. So the tradition is still the most practical way to do it. Just if you can't explain it, then many times you can't use it properly. You don't know what, you don't know exactly what you're doing. So then it's seen to be non-practical by, you know, other so-called practical persons. So-called meaning they have the intent to be practical, but the point is practical applied against the Shastra is not exactly practical. But they themselves are a practical person. So one has to be very, very careful. Is that tradition means what is the activities done by the great personalities. So it's not about India. It's about the universe. Right? Okay. So now if you take America and you take India, it looks like it's on equal footing. But you take America and you take the universe, it's kind of the proportions a bit out there. You know, especially when we hear the sizes. You know, we're on 25,000 around. You know, okay, so you flatten it out. That's what we're working at, 25,000 miles. But, you know, you hear about some of these planets that are millions. You know? So it's like, you know, we're not dealing with a whole lot here. So that's the whole point. This whole concept of saying Vedic is Indian, that is the trick of the Indologists. That's their trick. Because then, if it's just India, oh, then what do we have to learn from India? It's basically kind of like everything, maybe. You know, kind of like, you know, you get sick less if you clean your backside with water. It works really good. So, and if we want efficient... How long does it take to use water to clean your backside? And how long does it take to use a piece of toilet paper? Right? You got to use toilet paper so many times. And it's still not necessarily very clean. But at least it's good enough not to get in your undies, right? So it's good enough. So, and we're talking efficiency here? That's not efficient. Right? You know, not brushing your teeth or white rinsing your mouth after eating, how is that efficient? You know, since when are cavities efficient? You know what I'm saying? What is efficient about it, right? You know, you take a bath, you don't stink. You know, so what is so efficient about not taking a bath? You know what I'm saying? So what is this efficiency that they're talking about? You know, is the quality of their sleep better? Is the quality of their sex better? Right? Mm-hmm. You want to get into that? Then where do you go? Kama Sutra. Where is that from? India. Who do you go? Like, yeah. What is quantum based on? Numbers. Where are the numbers from? India. You know, like that. You know, it's like, where are all these guys? You know, Coltrane and that. Where do they get all this amazing stuff that they use in their jazz? India. And it's just, you know, what is this thing about it's equal? Since when is it equal? The Aryans came into the south, took over, managed the place. Are there still Dravidians? Plenty of them. They're all over the place. The white man came into America. He took over. Where are the Indians? So the whole point is this. How is this superior? What is superior in any way? Even economically. Give it time and you'll see who the CEOs are. They're not going to be Western. They're going to be Asian. Just give it another 20 years and you'll see who's sitting on the top. So the point is, what is superior about it? And this is the basis, and this is what's being used in devotional life to establish the Western culture over the Vedic. So the premise is already wrong. And the worst part is they don't even know it's wrong. It's like doing a big mathematical calculation, you got one thing wrong, and then everything else you do, even if there's some nice stuff. The point is, yes, it's not about the Vedic dress. But it's not about the Western dress either. It's about what works for Krishna. So if you're just being yourself, you like to be like those you like to be with. You know what I'm saying? If you're not supposed to wear a dhoti, because it doesn't say in Shastra the word dhoti, so does it say jeans? Does it say pants? Does it say chinos? Does it say cargos? You know, what is it? So that means then we should go around, you know, just wearing nothing. You know, that would be the real thing. You want to be real honest about the lesson, then you just go out on the farm and walk around in your birthday suit. You don't have to get involved in the modern, you know, whole scene, and, you know, you're free.
Less washing, too.
Less washing, hey. Yeah, less washing. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, that's like seriously less washing. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is where's the consistency? What's it about? So it's just about, and the point is what happens is the person doesn't change their lifestyle at all. They live exactly whatever's the lifestyle they grew up in. So then one can start to doubt, well, what is this? What is the thing? So if it can accommodate all these different lifestyles, why can't it accommodate around the world if we call ourselves international? You know, if we're talking eternal truth, it should work anywhere. You understand? So the point is these fundamental principles, if they're wrong, then no matter what detail you do, hit and miss, it may be right. But in consistency, it can't be. And, you know, and who wants to be part of something that's inconsistent? You understand? You know, there's a consistency. That's why people find shelter. People are looking for shelter. You know, materially, spiritually, emotionally. So they want to see consistency. There's a consistency that will attract, because then people will feel safe. But this other is, whatever I'm doing now, that's safe, but whatever I'm doing now is not giving me happiness, so that means then there's nothing. So there's no alternative. Does that make sense? Yeah, so one has to be very, very careful about those kind of things. Because they seem small, but they're actually very major points. That's why they're made into things that you throw them out, people just, oh, okay, and like that, but you don't actually think about them. Because they're actually dogma. There's nothing behind them. You have to be very, very careful. Is that okay? Because even if you say it's Indian, still, it's a lot superior. You know, if we're talking practical, take a dhoti, rinse it out, hang it up, it's dry. take a pair of jeans, rinse it out, hang it up. It takes a while to dry. So if we're talking about clean, dhoti's better. Talking about practical, I can do more things in a dhoti. Say, oh, it's not practical dhoti. It means they don't know how to wear them. That's all. Yeah.
The contamination appears to be the same as that in the Kasko Swamis and the Samaritans. It's by birth.
Yeah, that's by birth. Because it will be according to the thing there.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Antijuik Guru was close to what I was asking, but what's, you know, when you get down to all of this, what's the essence of the contamination and the mentality that simply wants to adapt or change or critique or...
Control and enjoy. It means the primary principle is that they want to control and enjoy. They're comfortable with a specific kind of controlling and enjoying, because outside of that, they're not comfortable. Does that make sense?
Everybody in that sense, then we're all controllers and enjoyers to some degree.
Yes, but now it's a matter of, are you willing to adjust the secondary controlling and enjoying, you know, with the idea that the primary one is, you know, supposed to be connected to Krishna, or we're going to say the secondary one is fine. Does that make sense? In other words, is it an improvement to give that up? Because if you can give up the secondary, which is a detail, then you have a shot at getting at the primary. But if you won't give up the secondary, then what's the meaning?
Prabhupada said something like, if a materialist adjusts externally, then a spiritualist adjusts internally.
Yes.
Is that the same kind of thing?
But talking about how the Vedic is not practical, that's not an internal adjustment.
But it's a material contamination that wants to control and adjust and change.
Yes, because the point is, then what is the thing? Are the people who are saying this, are they up to date in their dress? Or are they still dressing, you know, quite...
Actually, they've got really bad taste.
Yes, so that's my point. That's the point, is that because the thing is now, let us say we were being Western up to date, that's attractive. You would have to be able to move with the fashion.
Yeah.
That means you have to be able to not be as attached. You're attached to the principle of aesthetics, but not to the specifics.
Yes.
So, in other words, it's closer to what we're talking about. In other words, the guy who is up to date and good looking, it'll be easier to convince him of our philosophy and culture than the person who can't do that. You know, does that make sense? Like the practical guy who's successful in the world, he'll be able to relate to what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the guy who can't, then, other than, okay, maybe there's some shelter for my dissatisfaction and I'm a loser.
Yes.
But as far as actually doing something, it's like you come to the temple, you can't sit around and be lazy all day also. You have to be active. So it's the same things. The principles being missed, and their attachment is to the detail. But the point is your general person would, this is how the general person, let's take two examples here. You know, I mean, they'll be extreme, but they're kind of to get the point across, okay? You'll have one, and they see that I'm so attached to my Western lifestyle, it's so hard for me to do these Vedic things. You know, I really must be a bad person. I really feel bad. I'm not, you know, I'm so neophyte, or I'm not even a devotee at all. You know, like that. And so, in this way, then, technically they can't do much because of the mode of ignorance. So it's not a good position, but it has one viewpoint. And then the other one is, I can't do this, you know, so, you know, it means, why would anybody do this? You know, this is stupid. This is not practical. This is not what we want. This is not what Prabhupada's talking about. You understand? So all it is it's one has confidence, one lacks confidence. Otherwise, they're exactly the same thing. So that's why Manu makes the point that practicing a bogus philosophy, you get the reaction for whatever it is. Whatever's bogus, you get the reaction. Whatever's good, it's fine. But if you preach a bogus philosophy, you get 100 times the reaction. 100, he says. So therefore, it would be easier just, you know, be yourself, take the flack of people not liking what you're doing. It will be better for you than to preach and try to make it socially good for you. Because you do have to look at the future. It means you can't be, it means you have to be a little intelligent, you know. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's what Prabhupada and the Acharyas are talking about, extremely practical, but generally what happens is we either take it, you know, too far one way or the other way. The actual middle path is something very different. The actual middle path is you don't care, therefore you do whatever is the most practical. It's not to do with your conditioning. It's to do with whatever works in the situation. You know what I'm saying? Like in India, you wear a dhoti, it's perfectly fine, and people respect you as a sadhu and a saintly person. So to demand that you can come and lead evening aarti in shorts and a t-shirt, then how is that broad? How is that the middle path? Just as if in America you could wear that, why can't you wear the local dress here? How is it the American is the universal dress? And generally, if you go, I mean, like, go to an air, you know, go to the airport, let's say, in, you know, anywhere in Asia, you know, and people, depending on where it is, Singapore, Hong Kong, you know, people are pretty well dressed. I was shocked when you go on the street in Singapore. It's rare, it's hard to find someone who's not nicely dressed. But, you know, being in, you know, JFK or any major airports in America, it's rare. You have to stand for 45 minutes to an hour before you see one person that's dressed nice. And that's not an exaggeration. So it's just like, you know, how is this the... So if being a slob is the universal standard, okay, then say it. But don't try to present it as some kind of platform of dignity. You know what I'm saying? Just, you know, being a slob, we're slobs. Hey, we're Mleches, we're slobs. Okay, so if we're being a slob, then give us a break. Fine, okay. No, who's going to complain? You know what I said? But try to make it something dignified, you know, like that. You know, that's like, come to the Academy Awards in your board shorts and a singlet, you know, like that. And then say, yeah, you know, yeah, you know, it's not going to work. Yes?
It's a little off topic, but I'll probably yield a quick answer.
you don't know around here. There's these little things called buttons. And even though it's a small button, you push it. Like you notice he didn't even finish his sentence. Talking for half an hour.
So the people who are Buddhists and, you know, who purely surrender to the Lord and are only following his, you know, directions, do they get the same karmic reactions despite the fact that it was, you know, the Lord's?
Well, the thing is if they're actually following their celibates, and so then they're working under authority, so whoever's their authority would get there. But it doesn't mean that they don't get the reaction to their so-called spiritual consciousness. It means they can only get that kind of lower aspect of liberation. You know, and that's on a good day. But generally when you get up into the advanced stages, then it goes tantric.
Yeah.
So it doesn't actually remain on the level that Buddha actually taught. Because Buddha, what he gave was, have no residence, stay nowhere. You just, you know, walk, you know, sit, discuss, and at a certain time of day you go out begging, and then you spend the rest of the day discussing or doing your sadhana. That's actual Buddhism. So this, what you see in the world now, that's mixed with tantra.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
You know? Yeah. But the point is, if you do anything, work under authority, you get the benefit of that. Let's say, okay, the Hell's Angel, he does what he's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. It will reduce his reactions. He's in that group, he wears the colors, doesn't do what he's supposed to. Material nature will give him a reaction for not following the rules of being Hell's Angel. Just because the principle is you're supposed to follow authority. You know what I'm saying? He'll get the reaction for what he's doing also, but he'll also get the extra reaction for not following what he's accepted as his principle. So, just as here, they're preaching these bogus elements, but if they don't follow them themselves, they get a reaction for it. Does that make sense? That's just the way it works, because the principle is authority. That's the higher point.
Yeah.
So you have a mix there. You're going to get the consciousness is not going to get any better, but they'll have a problem with the personal aspect, but they won't have a problem with the sadhana regulation and all the those kind of things, the cultural elements.
But because they're preaching pretty much bogus philosophy, they'll get
the reaction for that. Yes, they'll get the reaction for that. But what I'm saying is, they'll be strong. Means if you're, I'm thinking in my mind of an Asian practicing Buddhism, yeah, like that. So for them, the culture's there. They just don't have much in the way of philosophy. Some of the ones know technically more their philosophy.
Yeah.
So they'll be strong like the Hindus in the culture, but not in the philosophy. And then they'll have to develop that. The Westerners, because they're used to kind of neither, a little bit of each. So they catch certain aspects of the philosophy quickly, but not the technical points.
Yeah.
But the culture then they lack. So the only culture they can fall back on is their own, unless they have an eclectic background, which mostly those who preach against the Vedic must not have. Because otherwise, if you had an eclectic background, the East is always part of your upbringing. There's always stuff. I mean, the guy around the corner, his whole house was decorated with stuff from India because he was here during the Raj. He used to call India, like that. He was some kind of officer in the in the British Army, like that. So everything, the Persian rugs, or this, or that. Everything in his house was that, So it's kind of like, it's natural. This thing where you can't relate to it at all, that means you had a very, very narrow background.
Yeah.
And so what's that? Because American is either Red Indian or European. You have, these are the two choices, unless you want to take cowboy, and then that's getting really bad. Of course, the jeans are there, the pancakes are there. Yeah, the meat eating is there. That's about it.
Guns.
Yeah, if you're a member of the NRA, then you could relate to that part. But generally, that side they're a little bit more dignified.
High class.
Yeah, come on. Because they can connect with the European more.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? So, what is this culture they're talking about? What is it? You change, instead of using flat pieces of bread, you use round ones, and now it's American. But the sandwich is British. The hot dog, that's German. The pizza, that's Italian. The stuff with salsa and all that on it, that's from below the Rio Grande. We won't talk about that. Does that make sense? And then the things in the little box that you eat with sticks, so that came from, over the Pacific. So what's the local food? We're going to get into gumbo or something. Even that's French and then, Caribbean. So what's the local... What is America? There is nothing that's American. And then they're so proud that what we're doing, what we pick to the world, that's the perfection.
They have deep fried butter.
Deep fried butter?
Yeah, stick of butter, deep fried.
It's like a butter pakora.
Yeah.
And you put anything? Oh, you put something on the outside?
Yeah,
there's batter fried.
Batter fried, but still, the pakora doesn't come from there.
No. it's a serious twist.
The concept is they're acting as if they've worked out the but the point is they. Now, of course, there is the discussion whether the New York pizza is better than the original Italian pizza. Now, that's a major discussion.
That's the issue.
Yeah, but other than that, but even that was developed by Italians.
Yeah.
Right? Does that make sense? They eat bagels, right? Who eats bagels? One, they have to be a little bit more educated and all that. And it wasn't introduced by the honkies. The Goy did not bring bagels to America. Does that make sense?
Mm.
So one has to know what's going on. It's like I think the favorite food when you eat out of the home in England is curry.
Mm-hmm.
That's the favorite thing.
UK's national dish.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's true. It was listed as a national dish 3 years ago. It overtook every other dish in the UK as being the national.
Even fish and chips.
Over fish and chips.
Wow. This is serious. This is serious. This is serious. Yeah. So the whole thing is so the point is this ability to adjust and adapt is the nature, because the soul basically doesn't have anything from here. It's natures that interact with Krishna. So to be able to adjust these things, we've been doing it since time. How do you get through 8,400,000 species of life unless you adjust? You have to adjust. Right? You don't walk in and you don't see your dog, up on the couch with some, with the sunnies on, with the remote, looking at, what do you call it, the Animal Planet. when you come in, and what are you doing? I was watching that. It's not happening.
No.
So the adjustment is there. So that's the whole thing, is we're simply being made, in principle, the adjustment. Because personally, we really don't care. We don't care what the person wears, what he eats, and all that. What we care about is it connected to Krishna.
Yes.
So these other things to say, all these seemingly philosophical, cultural elements, they're to stop us from connecting it to Krishna. They'll say, no, but we're connecting this other way, but they're doing it against the other. How clean is that? You can tell the difference between innocence, where you just do, and where you're doing it to prove a point. It's very obvious when somebody does something. So it's how is that useful? So that's the bottom line. Because otherwise, really, we don't care.
Mm.
Because Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had people out in three-piece pinstripe suit with spats. And with their hair parted down the middle. Because that was what was in fashion then. So they were up to date.
Mm.
So the point is if that's what works, fine. But what works is that they understand pure devotional service. But if we won't talk about pure devotional service because that'll freak them out, then what's the use of the whole show? If it won't get pure devotional, in other words, if there's no option, we'll sit down and chant. We won't bother.
Yes.
But if there's anybody that's willing to hear just one person, then that's enough. We're not worried about a crowd. Because one will turn into two, two into four, four into eight, like this it'll go, and then it becomes very big very quick. Okay. After that little detour there, back to okay. But the living entity is different from such material products. It is due to the living entity's forgetfulness of eternal nature as eternal servant of the Lord, and his false conception of being so-called Lord of the material nature, that he's obliged to enter into the existence of false sense enjoyment. Thus, a concomitant generation of material energies is the principal cause of the mind's being materially affected. It means that you do something, and the reactions from that, it generates the next one that affects you. So it's you have free will what you do with it, but the point is, because you've started this, you tend to just continue with it. Thus, the gross body of five elements is produced. Now, you think one thing, it will manifest a gross body that matches that, what you think. Like, you think like a pig, you'll get a pig body. Mm-hmm. You think like a dog, you get a dog body. You think like a human, you get a human body.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Does the same apply for animals?
No, because the dog actually thinks like a dog.
Yes.
Yeah, so it's just that he has a certain amount of time with that, and then it just moves up. Because, in other words, they're not going through all the species. You only go through what is connected with what you did to generate that.
Okay, so like coming to the material world is like a prison sentence in itself, but then taking the animal form is like an even more serious.
Yes, like that. Because the natural position is human for the living entity. And so if you do something wrong, then its nature of its wrongness is certain animal species that match that. In other words, they have this similar mentality or facility or an activity or something. So you go through those and a certain amount of time in each like that. Then you come back to the exact situation you were in as a human that you made that choice in the first place. Right? In other words, if you started KFC And then, you know, you go to, you know, hell, go through so many different animal species of life, you know, how you say, reed, chicken, you know, then, you know, you'll come back basically in the same position. You have the same opportunity, you know, and then you just keep doing it till one day you won't come up with the idea or you'll think, that's stupid, right? And then you'll move on. But because we're being on the, you know, basically the soul being eternal, we're talking, and the mentality being connected with the soul that starts it, we're talking about very long time. Yeah. You know, so we're talking about millions and millions of lifetimes going and all these varieties of pursuits. Yeah. Yeah. So that's why the term's used, anadi. It means you can't count. It means, of course, God knows, but it's like it's in connection with us. It's not about what he knows, it's about what we can know. So therefore, it's anadi. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like that. But some of them change like that. It's where the consciousness lies. I'm not sure that it doesn't adjust, because it probably mentions like the worm, it gets stung by the wasp and then put into there, you know, whatever it is there. Well, you can't really call it, I guess even, I'm not sure if you call it a nest, but whatever it is, yeah, the wasp makes.
It's like a nest.
Yeah. And that, so it dies thinking of the wasp, but in the next life it becomes a wasp. Mm-hmm. So there may be the element, so maybe the, but they move up, because it's cows, monkeys or primates, and
tigers.
They move into human. They're kind of like the top of the top of the pile. Mm.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Yeah.
Thus, the gross body of five elements is produced. Maharaj Yudhishthira reversed the action and merged the five elements of the body into the three modes of material nature. Right. So now this is why we learn about creation, exactly how it works, because then you can just reverse it and go out of material consciousness. Footnote 9. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains, where will the five elements be situated? He offered the body of five elements into the three gunas. He offered the three gunas into one aggregate, a portion of Maya. He offered all that into the jiva. Jiva, this portion of Maya with the three gunas is yours. Remain separate from that and do not come under its control. Right, so he's pointing out the jiva, and then he's saying that the jiva says, this portion, my whole mentality, that is Maya, so that will put back into Maya, but the part that's me, that will remain.
Yes. Right?
He offered the jiva into Brahman, because the jiva is transcendental, so the jiva is part of transcendence. Mm-hmm. So that's there. Offering the kingdom to Parikit, Mathura to Vajra, distancing himself from all those relationships. He became oblivious to the eternal external world. Offering the senses and the rest to the respective controllers. Because the senses all come from deities, so they all go back. Right? In other words, you borrowed something, you give it back. That's what he's doing. Right? He became oblivious to internal functions. The jiva belongs to Krishna, or Brahman. The aggregate of Maya belongs to the jiva. The gunas belong to the aggregate. Because it's about the aggregate. It means all of it together, because you're going to work with it all together. You can't just work one thing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like that.
Marsh's aggregate came in like mud?
It appears. Because that's what it opened with. You know, because Prabhupada talked about this Mahatattva. Mm-hmm. And then from that you get the distinction, so the less manifest of the elements. So you put those back, then you get back to the aggregate. The aggregate of Maya belong, okay, the gunas belong to the aggregate. The five elements belong to the gunas. Death belongs to the five elements of the body. Apana belongs to death. Prana belongs to apana. The mind belongs to prana. The senses belong to the mind. The sense objects belong to the senses. The enjoyer of the sense objects is Parikit, not me.
It should be understood, however, that because Yudhishthira is an eternal associate of the Lord, this meditation where he considers his eternal form to be a temporary body is of no significance at all. Right? So it's just something he goes through. It's just something you do. It's just like, let's say, for the kid, right? You know, father's not at home. He looks around. The keys are sitting there. He picks them up. He runs out to the car, looks both ways, gets in, you know, sits down, you know, like this. So it's a big thing for him. But for the father, it's not a big deal. He just gets the keys without even thinking, goes in, starts the car, drives out, you know, runs over the tricycle, you know, does the whole thing. Right? You know, so he's not really worried about it.
So it's because he's already realized this, that he's just going through.
Yes. It's just, this is the mechanics how you get rid of it. So for him, it's not major. For the Mayavadis and Buddhists and other, this is a major thing.
For us.
Huh?
For us.
I mean, for, like that. Yeah. Okay, yeah, but for us, it's like, this is technically how it works, but the point is, if you just connect it to Krishna, Krishna takes care of it. Because Maya arranged it, by Brahman is brought out, it'll put it all back, so you don't have to worry about that. But here is just mechanically a way to do it. You can do that, you do. And if you can just think of Krishna, that's better. But he's, you know, doing both, because they're living in the Vedic age, so they do these things. It's just standard stuff. But we're in Kali Yuga, so a lot of that we don't get into so much detail. Like that. Yeah.
I heard in a class recently that the goal of our process is to dissolve the material ego and material mind. And the doubt was, is it a dissolving process or a transforming process?
It's transforming. It means dissolving is there, but the point is that to transform you have to dissolve. So it's not the goal. Our process is to dissolve the material, consciousness of the material phenomena and develop love and attraction for Krishna and then function within that platform of loving relationship with the Lord. That's our goal. But in the process, that's what's so special is that the material platform, your process and result are different. On the spiritual platform, they're the same. So chanting is the process, chanting is the goal. Remembering Krishna is the process, remembering Krishna is the goal. But this thing of dissolving the material energy, it's only a preliminary of the process, an aid to the process. So it's never our goal to remove that. Means it can be. You could say it is a goal, but it's not the ultimate goal. So a devotee could say, if they're talking about material energy, it's our goal to dissolve this. But then that's where Prabhupada uses what is the ultimate goal. Because all goals should be progressive towards the ultimate goal of pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? So you have to discern the context. So now if they're thinking that this is all we have to do, then that's a mistake. If they're simply, if they're showing that it's not about being absorbed in the material nature because we're trying to get rid of that. But how do you get rid of, let's say I have a material attachment, right? Hopefully not getting too far the other way. You know, we have a material attachment. Now, by seeing how to connect that to Krishna, right? That's going to then spiritualize it. So that's the process of dissolving it. And then having done that, then you can decide whether you need to continue with that or not. Or even if it is within your duties, you continue, but at some point, duties change and simplify, so it'll be dropped at some point. You know, other than, let's say, I think, chewing and swallowing. One devotee was telling me when she was a small girl, she's eating, she asked her father, is this something when you grow up, you got to keep doing this? He says, yeah, you got to do this your whole life. She was so disappointed. It's like, you know, this is such an annoyance. I guess you should go on a liquid diet, right? Yeah. But then you have to swallow.
Yeah.
And drink. Maybe. Then you have to get the needles. No. What about orchids? Now, orchids got it down, right? Yes?
In this verse, there's kind of like three descriptions. The original verse Prabhupada gives, he's giving one sequence of the amalgamation, and then Vishwanath Chakravarti Chakur is giving another one. So
no, it's all the same. It's just a matter of how much. It's like when we say the mind.
Yes.
Are we, the mind, do we mean 16? The mind, do we mean 20? The mind, do we mean 9? Mm-hmm. You know, like that. Or do we mean just one?
So it's just a matter of the context, you understand. So Vishwanath, you see, he's talking about all the rest of it. So he's just, by mentioning the one, then you know the rest. So he's just showing the one main thing that merges in. He's not using the mechanical things in between, except for the prana and all that, because that's not described in the other. Like that. So wherever it's not described, you give more. Wherever it's described, you leave that, you know, or expand on them. Does that make sense? Yeah. Like it may have seemed funny in the Laghu Griha Bhagavatamrita that Rupa Goswami says something, and then in the commentary by Vishwanath is exactly the same. So one would think, you know, what's the need of the commentary? Because Rupa Goswami said it in a poetic form, and the names he used were how do you say? Not necessarily well known.
Non-standard.
Yeah, not necessarily standard names that we're used to. Like we know Vamanadeva, but you know, let's say Aditi Sutta. We don't. When I say Aditi Sutta, it's not Vamanadeva comes to your mind immediately.
Yes.
You know, like that. You know, or Aditi Priya, or Kasyapa Priya. You know, it doesn't. So he's using terms like this, and so. The translator has already translated them, so how we know them, but Vishwanath is simply saying that this is actually what it's saying. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So they'll bring out something more. But he's giving the essence. Like here he says that, you know, Jiva, this portion of Maya is yours, right? You know, remain separate from that. Do not come under its control, right? So the Jiva is in the material nature. There's what you call your field of action. That is the Maya that's under your control. And what it means by your control doesn't mean I'm the Lord and Master of all this. It means this is what you can work with. Right? Now it's a matter of you work with it in connection with the Lord. You're not under its control. You're engaging it. You're controlling it. It actually controls you.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? It's just like the mother controlling the child is under the control of the child.
Mm. Yes.
Does that make sense?
So specifically, in the original verses, he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind, then the mind into life, life into breathing. So when it says into life, does that mean the jiva?
No, the prana. What's
the connection?
The prana. He's talking about the life air. Daiho Maharaj. Danita.
Yes.
Are you speaking generally in terms of field of action, or how detailed and specific? Like
means what you can observe.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily you can control it, but that's within your scope of what you're dealing with. These are the modes of nature that you work with. Just like you move through the world, you see things, see certain experiences that others don't even go to those places. Or you walk through it, you see one thing, someone else walks through it and sees another. Like let's say you walk into a candy store, like the child sees, you know, candy and enjoyment, you know, the dentist sees business, you know, the mother sees dental bills, and a businessman thinks, wow, this is a good business. Everybody's got kids love candy, you know, like that, you know what I'm saying? So those are the modes you work with. You understand? Those are your modes. That's your quota of material energy. So that's what then you take and amalgamate. You don't have to amalgamate someone else's, you know. You know, you're sitting there and you're quiet on the couch for a while, and then your friend is, you know, a little inquisitive, and you turn to him with this peaceful, wise look and says, I amalgamated all your material energy back into, you know, the aggregate. You know, it's kind of like, oh, well, thank you. You know, it's like, you know, what?
You're weird.
I wanted to eat that.
I was looking forward to that.
What if it changes suddenly?
That's the way Maya works. It always changes. So that's the whole point, is that it can easily, as it expands out so smoothly, it can go back, it can adjust, it can transform, that's the thing. But it will transform according to its natural ways of transformation. You know, like kingdoms are there, kingdoms are lost. Right? Kingdom doesn't turn into a butterfly or something, right? But a caterpillar turns into a butterfly. Does that make sense? So, like that, things that are natural to it can suddenly change. That's just a transformation. That's why Maya is not a stable place of security. Right? We do the best we can, but it's ultimately it's Krishna. So the Maya becomes useful in its being, engaged in Krishna's service or connected to Krishna. That's then where it actually gives us security. Security means it gives the soul security. It doesn't necessarily the body ends up secure. But it's basically the best shot you got. You follow the laws of nature, it's the best you'll get. Like Yudhishthira lost his kingdom for 14 years. Like that. So it happens. But he lost an empire, right? He got it back. You know, most others didn't, right? Caesar didn't exactly get it back. You know, he got it. He got it in the back, right? Yeah, like that. But,
it's the secondary field of action.
Yes, it's secondary. But that's the specifics of the modes of nature that are yours to work with. Like that. But because the nature of the modes, they're always changing, because every mode has the other modes in it. So at any point they can transform. That's why the example is given of water on the lotus leaf. You know, it's you've seen that? It's really far out. It sits there just like perfectly, just any, it goes so quickly. That's the thing. You know, if it was on any other surface it goes slower, but on the lotus leaf it comes so fast. Yeah. So does that make sense? So that's why ultimately Krishna, because everything here will go. It's just everything will go. You know, so then Krishna's who will remain, because it's all Krishna anyway. So it's just the material energy, the transformations don't bring about happiness or satisfaction. The transformation from the spiritual world, that desesha, that specialness, that brings happiness, because it's all connected to Krishna. Well, here, even though it's Krishna, we don't get the benefit because we're not connecting to Krishna. Like that. When we connect it to Krishna, then we get that spiritual benefit. And then the material, as good as material offers. So sometimes it's great, sometimes it's a little bit less. Yeah. But yes.
Isn't it possible to almost predict how and when and why things will change through a deep understanding of the modes of nature?
Yes. That's how the sages see. So it says tree calling ya. They can tell. It's just like what was his name? Was it? I can't remember. It was Kalidas? Or, no, it wasn't Kalidas. Oh yeah, he was. He was the guy on the branch. Tenali Ram. Might be no Kalidas. There's a guy sitting on the branch and cutting on the tree side of the branch. And he told them, says, if hey, don't do that, because the branch will fall and you'll fall on the ground. And the guy says, ah, what do you know? You're a Brahmin. I'm the practical guy. I'm the villager, you know. Like that. And so he cut the branch. He fell on the ground. They came to, oh, you're a great astrologer. You can see the future. You know? So you just so many things that you can see there. You just know how they'll go. Then there's the element, of course, of the mystic, where the Lord allows one to see beyond. But even just practically, you just know how modes unfold. You know, it's just like, let's say, a young teenage boy, you know, a young teenage girl, you know, end up, you know, having to sit in one place alone for some time. Okay, what can you predict? you understand like that?
Yeah.
Okay, fabulous chocolate cake. You know, and then there's a guy who's just uncontrollable eater and loves sweets. What can you predict? Yeah, even though it's a birthday cake, it's for someone else. He'll just have to try it, just a little bit of the frosting. You know, have to do it in such a way you can't see. You know, take the frosting off, cut the outside edge. You know. Something. He's going to do something. Does that make sense? So like that, the modes run through specific patterns. When it goes beyond the patterns you can understand, just know that then Prabhupada says, then you just know that Krishna is in control. And it's just happening the way. Because it's just like, you know, what is it, this interesting thing in America, you know, when the clouds spin, they always draw air. depending upon whether they draw hot or cold air, then you get a hot or cold, you know. They're technically all cyclones. It's just a matter of their size. They're called a hurricane, or real small, they're a tornado. You know, but there it's turning, but it's sucking air from up down. You know, nobody's ever seen that before. They've never heard of it before. You know, they're thinking that ice is going to creep down, and because that, you know, the farmer's there with his pitchfork running away, you know, like that. And, you know, and as the ice comes down, it touches his goat and gets fangs, you know. You know, this whole thing. But here is just, you know, the air is reversing. And then, you know, it's cold in, what is it, New Orleans. It doesn't get cold in New Orleans. New Orleans, it just doesn't happen. Like that. You know, so then, at least it'll be good for the shrimp farmers, right? You know, because then you don't need refrigerators and stuff. But other than them, I don't think anybody's happy. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Then you just understand it's Krishna's mode. So we can know what we are capable of. The Shastra gives us the technicalities, but we don't necessarily put that together. Here he's saying about the how you say, the apana belongs to death. Now you have to know what apana does, because one does in, out, up, down, expanding, all these different things. If you know those, then you understand how what that action is, the death action. Prana, you know, belongs to apana. Like that, because generally you take prana as the main. It's the main one that's worshipped, but prana actually belongs to the other, because only if you're not dead, then it works. Like I'm not sure how prana works in the undead. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So then you go. Then the mind belongs to prana. So because what activity you can do, that's what the mind's connected to. Because the mind can only accept and reject. We're saying the mind controls, but the point is the mind's position is it can only accept and reject what can be done. That's done by prana. Prana can only be done if you're not dead. Does that make sense? So then you start to see things in a very different light, because you've reversed it. We're always looking at it in one way. But you reverse it, then it takes on a whole different view. Is that? Yes.
So when the verse speaks about amalgamating his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, does that mean the universal form?
Yeah. Yes, that's what you'd have to get back to. Because that's where all the forms come from. Because this is just a borrowed form. You know, it's like going into I don't know what you call it. I mean, so you have the green room. Maybe not the green room, the dressing room. They have all these costumes. And then you go and you put those on. And then, you know, when you're finished, they go back. You know, they don't belong somewhere else. They're not yours. But, you know, as long as you're using them, they're yours to use. You know, it's not that the guy in charge of the room, you know, halfway through the drama tells you, hey, you have to get it back, it belongs there. You know, it's yours for the whole drama. When the drama's over, you know, the run is finished, then you give it back. Right? You know. Does that make sense? Yes.
So, Maharaj, by this reversing process, then the conditioned soul would identify with what's real in the identity and you put aside on this.
Yes. Other. Yes. Yes, that's the idea, is that you start to really analyze what's going on, and then you see that all that's left is the soul. So then the soul goes back into Brahman, or the energy. But that Brahman is coming from Krishna. Right? So he's making the point, is you either stop at that point, or you take it farther. So we'll go farther. That's the point where the impersonalist stops. Well, for us, then Brahman is Krishna's effulgence. And then, you know, and then why is that effulgence? It's because of the wonderful qualities. And the qualities means that activities. Activities means there's a place, there's associates, there's that rasa between them. And so then we just keep taking it back until you get to, you know, the full-blown pastimes. So the process, where any of these processes work all the way through. Is that nice?
The qualitative distinction of the body as being good, bad, or mediocre is extinguished. And again, the qualitative manifestations become merged in the material energy, which is produced from a false sense of the pure living being. Because right? You have the identity that produces the particular body you have. And then there's the designation that's given to it as a further. So you put the designation back into the body, and then the body back in the mind back into the aggregate where those bodies all come from, where it's borrowed from, right? And then that part is just left with material nature, right? Then the jiva continues.
Yes.
Okay. When one is thus inclined to become an associate of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, in one of the innumerable planets of the spiritual sky, especially in Goloka Vrindavan, one has to always think that he is different from the material energy. He has nothing to do with it. Why I said it's especially one who is interested in Goloka Vrindavan. Because if you're not so focused on that I'm not the material energy, but you're engaging everything according to your duties, right, the prescribed duties in the Lord's service, you can get into Vaikuntha. Mm-hmm. Like that. But if you want to get into Goloka, you have to give this up. Because there, it's so far beyond the externals that it's not, it won't work. Right? Like, remember, who was talking about that? That he was talking about in Karma Yoga. Remember, it was the opening. Then those purports in the first chapter, those were Vishwanath. No, in Bhagavatam. Vishwanath Chakrabarti. So Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur was making the point that Bhagavatam kicks out anything that's not pure devotional service, that including Karma Yoga. But we've just been studying the Gita, learning how Karma Yoga is connected with the Lord. So then Vishwanath points out is that Karma Yoga has two levels, the Sakam and the Nishkam. So Sakam is just thrown out because it's useless in pure devotional service. Nishkam is useful, but it's still not the stage you want. You want to get to that pure devotional platform. But it's said from the Nishkam platform that if you come in contact with somebody who is dealing, worshiping the Lord in majesty, you can from that platform go to Vaikuntha. Right? So even if you're not on the pure platform, you can still go to Vaikuntha where you'll develop pure devotion. But for Vrindavan, you start with pure devotion and then go to pure unalloyed devotion. One has to always think that he's different from the material energy. He has nothing to do with it. And he has to realize himself as pure spirit, Brahman, qualitatively equal with the supreme Brahman, Parameshwar. Right? So it's not just Brahman, but Brahman with the supreme Lord himself. He's just that equalness. We're all Brahman, but he's the supreme Brahman. So you have to also see him as Brahman. Right? So that means it's his, but that's his form. So then you will be equal with that nature of the equal with the form. Then you can interact with the form. Because otherwise, if you only go up to Brahman, you don't interact with Brahman. Brahman doesn't have a form, you don't have a form. It doesn't leave a lot for interaction.
Same equality.
Yeah, because quantity was in a, means we are 1/10,000 the tip of the hair. That's just the size, and Krishna is unlimited, so it's not going to get any better than that. It's not that, well, hey, I'm 2/10,000 the tip of the hair. Yeah. He's a big soul. Like that. Maharaj Yudhishthir, after distributing his kingdom to Parikshit and Vajra, did not think himself emperor of the world or head of the Kuru dynasty. His sense of freedom from material relations, as well as freedom from material engagement of the gross and subtle encirclement, makes one free to act as the servitor of the Lord, even though one is in the material world. So here's the point, is that even in the material world, you're in the spiritual world. So you're getting the spiritual benefit, but, of course, you're working with inferior, ingredients. Like that. So then, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. But if you can do that, means in other words, you can function on the Brahman platform with inferior ingredients,
then you're given the opportunity to be in the spiritual world, you know, on that Brahman platform, right, called Brahma-Bhuta, to deal with superior.
Yes.
But now the point is this, you're only given that opportunity if you're going to use that towards Krishna. Right? But then you're going to associate with the Lord's associates, develop that same mood of attraction, right? Then, you know, come into that association with Krishna. Then you develop that love like they have. Right? Then it will work. Yes.
So Maharaj, this is the only level of freedom, otherwise it is working under the material mode.
Yes, it's the only level of freedom. So that's why switching one mode for another or switching one for another is not actually what we're doing. It was popular in the 90s, this thing, you got to get yourself in the mode of goodness. Yes. But that's only useful because goodness and pure goodness are right next to each other. But this point of getting to goodness is perfection, then it will be a distraction. Because then you'll focus on just doing things in goodness rather than doing things in pure devotion.
Yes.
And nowadays no one talks about that.
Yes.
Because it's just, we're not pious enough. Right? You know, take some smartas and tell them, you know, it's about goodness. And then from there, then they can do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're not exactly, you know, mode of goodness material here. You know, we're kind of... You know what I'm saying? There's elements, you know, because there's nothing's pure. Ignorance still has passion and goodness in it. Passion has ignorance and goodness in it. Goodness has passion and ignorance in it. So they're never pure. Like that. But if anybody could make it pure, then possibly either the Russians or the Czechs could do it. Right? No?
Why?
Why? Because they get the most distilled alcohol there is. Right? You know, vodka's 90 proof, and then there's that, what is that? The green one? Absinthe.
Yeah.
That's like totally, absolutely ridiculous. No?
Hey. Just the facts.
Just the facts. This stage is called Jivan Mukta stage, or the liberated stage. Even in the... Well, we turned the page.
We got 2 minutes.
We've done like 8 or 9 pages up to now. So I was thinking, yeah, we'll finish this and go on to the next one. Okay, in the material world. I didn't get that. Okay, this stage is called the Jivan Mukta stage, or the liberated stage, even in the material world. That is the process of ending material existence. One must not only think that he is Brahman, but must act like Brahman. That's the point. It's not just say, I'm not the body, and then do something that's very bodily. It has to be, I'm not the body, and I act as if I'm not the body.
Yes.
Because if I'm not the body, if I'm not attached to the body, it means it's one thing, I'm not the body, but I'm attached to it. That's the rest of the sentence.
Yes.
Right? You know, but if I'm not the body and I'm not attached to the body, then it doesn't matter to me what the body does.
Yes.
Right? Let's say, you know, like everybody gets together and okay, it's the Sunday, you know, feast. Okay, you cook the puris, you cook the pakoras, you cook this, you cook that. And it works fine. Because you're not attached. It's just the principle of cooking. But if I'm attached, no, I always get to cook the halava. Why can't I cook the halava? You know, then you cook the halava. You know what I'm saying? But you can't use both. You can't say, I'm not this body, but I'm attached to this body and want to do the things not of this body. But at the same time, is that, but if somebody else's body, you know what I mean? So it just gets very complicated. Mm. Point, you know, not the body, then whatever it is, you know, fine. You know?
Yes.
One must not only think that he is Brahman, but must act like Brahman. One who only thinks himself Brahman is an impersonalist, and one who acts like Brahman is the pure devotee. Right? So the pure devotee means he knows he's Brahman, and then that Brahman is engaged in the Lord's service.
So actually sometimes when we hear, you're not the body, Prabhu, then the rest of the sentence is, so you should do as I say.
Yeah, it's used in a variety of ways. It has many, many ways. Like the other day I was hearing that it's something that you don't have the ability to do, and the authority says,
no, but you're not the body. You know, and it's not that you, it means, but you happen to be there. You know, it's not that no one else is here, and it's kind of like, you know, the kitchen's on fire. Well, I'm not a fireman, but the point is you got to put out the fire. You know, it's like that. But it's a matter of you could get someone else to do it, but it's just easier since you're standing there first. Then these techniques are used. You know,
yes.
You know, before it was, you know, Sarva, then you got to surrender to Boo. You know, now it's you're not this body. You know, and then, you know, given another few years, there'll be another Mahavakya. So it goes through all the different.
Okay, he said, "Was get off the mental platform."
Yeah, you know,
get off the mental platform.
Yeah. You know, so everybody has, you know, and it works. Yeah. It's great because it's addressing the specifics of the time.
Mm.
You know, so. Generally, people know what it means, but then if you start using it and people don't know what it means, then that's where it starts to lack its, you know, its maha-ness starts to fade, right, you know. Okay. No, let's see, okay. Okay. Yeah. So, acting like Brahman means the Brahman acts, so that's the soul, that's the living entity. Because we see Krishna's Brahman is acting. Right, his internal potency is Brahman is acting. Even Maya is acting. Yeah. Right, so that means the jiva would naturally be acting. Otherwise, what's that Brahman that doesn't act?
Mm.
Right. So you have Krishna as Atmaram, but he's just, you know, the point is how you say he's still conscious. He's still everything. All these different energies are there, and how you say. Internal potency means active. External potency is pradhan is not active, so you want to merge into that. You know, so that's basically, I think, as far as they get. At least that's as good as it would get, let's say, for a Buddhist or something. Because there's no light there, you know. So, you know, so most of the systems, they go back to pradhan. You know, like that. Nyaya, Vaisheshika, like that. Shankya, they just go back to Brahman and stop. So that's why the point is made. Coming to that Brahman, then one has to act like it. Otherwise, why say make the statement? Because all the other systems get you up to that platform, and having gotten there, then you have to continue. Because Brahman means active, because we're energy. We're not masculine. Masculine is the only one who can sit down. So the only one of all the four Brahmans that can sit and do nothing is Krishna.
Yes.
But the other three have to be doing something, or they're really not doing anything.
Yes.
You know? Like, it's not conscious. Pradhan is not conscious.
Where do we put the Brahma Jyoti in this?
Brahma Jyoti is Krishna's effulgence.
Yes.
So it's part of Krishna. When we talk about Krishna,
so beyond
then there's Krishna, Paramatma, and Brahman. Like that. Yeah, so he's in his own category. So that's why the other energies are all pervaded by Brahman. Right? It means his Brahma Jyoti pervades everything. That's where everything comes from. The qualities are coming from there. You know, the spiritual world, everything connects to Krishna, so why worry about the Brahman? Right? Because it's the person who's wonderful. But in the material platform, then you're going to look at it from that material. It's a step up to understand Brahman. Then you understand the soul. So that's the closest you get. Mukti is as close as you get to the spiritual. Like that. Because Adhokshija will drop down into that. That's why Adhokshija is the level of Naishkarmya.
Yes.
Performance of duties without attachment to the results. Yes. Right? Dharma, then that's the regulations, but then in that position, then that's generally Sakam.
Yes.
It's for yourself.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And then that you just want the results, not worrying in the Dharma, then it drops it lower into, you know, Artha.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, your modern, or anything other than Vedic.
Yeah.
Right, and then you drop that down where it's only about yourself, then that's your anamoy, that's the lowest.
Mm-hmm. So that's niti.
Niti works, niti is kind of in between artha and kama.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's kind of that junction.
Yeah.
It's just, but it's a mechanical, effective method to get things done, so you're using it when you're applying the other methods.
Yes.
It's just that how far you take the niti.
Yes.
In other words, niti is supposed to be in relationship to the others. But if you don't put it in relationship to the others, it does. The sages have filled it out for those people. Just like yoga has its position, or karma, or jnana,
in bhakti. But if you're not accepting bhakti, then you try to fill out the other parts with itself. You try to make it complete, though it's not. So bhakti is the only thing that includes them all.
Yes.
You know, each has its place.
Yes.
Right? And that also goes for, say, the Vaisheshika.
Yes, but they only take that and try to complete it in incomplete. That's why it says they're incomplete.
Yeah.
Not that they're wrong. They're incomplete. Like the impersonalists, that this is the method to get to the Brahman platform, they're right. But the problem is thinking that that's the end, that's where they're wrong. That's why we were saying before on the goal, is you have to understand the difference between goal, meaning ultimate, and goal, meaning what your immediate endeavor or your long-term endeavor is trying to get.
Yes.
Is that all has to eventually get to Krishna.
Yes.
Is that okay?
That's okay. Yes.
Jai Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki
Jai
Shri Prabhupada ki
Jai
Samavetar Bhaktivinda ki
Jai
Jainatai Gaur Prima
Hari Hari Bo.